one of the things that I'm very, very passionate about is helping people move as well as they can and as much as they can in the best way possible.
Hi, I'm Eric Weir. Thank you for joining me in another episode of Study Your Way to Success. And thank you for joining me today with my friend, Dr. Kaipo Sotelo.
There you go. Thank you for having me, Eric.
Kaipo, good having you. So usually I see you. He comes by my house like at 7:30 in the morning with like needles and stuff like that because I had a back surgery that went poorly.
Yeah.
And I was like limping really badly like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. My shoes getting worn on one side, and now I'm in a whole lot better shape. So what got you into that field?
So a little background on me, Eric. I'm a physical therapist. I got my doctorate of physical therapy from the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston. I've been practicing for the last few years here in Greenville, and you happen to be one of my better success stories. When I met you, you were limping pretty tough, and one of the things that I'm very, very passionate about is helping people move as well as they can and as much as they can in the best way possible. For you, that looked like with the needles, right? Dry needling. Right. I'm a certified dry needle practitioner. Mm-hmm. And I am one of the therapists in the area that uses that to help people regain motion, decrease pain, and really regulate the body so that way you can move and do more of what you like. For example, one of the things that you complained about to me was you weren't feeling like you can walk all that straight. And then that's affecting your ability to golf. Really all that well. We were talking earlier about golf.
It's true.
One of my favorite memories of you, Eric, was one day you were really, really happy over the moon at 7:30 in the morning. I'm like, why are you so happy this morning? You told me that you shot an 80
right.
at the cliffs.
And right.
Best golf of your life.
That's true.
It's like you weren't limping then.
No, I was. It was fantastic. Yeah, it made a big difference. So huge.
The biggest reason why, to answer your question, are stories like that. Mm-hmm. The reason why I'm a physical therapist and I went into this field, in the medical field, in this way is my mom had a condition called scleroderma. That was a condition that robbed her of her movement. Scleroderma, in a sense, its base form, we have a bunch of this bouncy type tissue. Mm-hmm. It's called collagen, and essentially our body lays fibrotic tissue there instead. So you're getting really, really stiff, really, really tight, and that's everywhere. It's not just your skin. Scleroderma means rock skin, but on the inside as well, so she had trouble with digestion and all that. So slowly, she started losing her ability to move in every way. And actually took her life 3 years ago in 2020. So my personal mission for being a physical therapist, a lot of times people assume it's because of my background as an athlete. That is true, but the main core why is because of my mom and because of her fight and her ability to move being taken from her. I want to make sure everyone can do that because your ability to move really dictates your ability to live your life to its fullest. Longevity over a long lifespan.
That's fantastic. Well, so I know for speaking personally, it's a much better quality of life. Mm-hmm. And if I have a bad game, I've got something I can blame it on. Now.
Yeah, you can blame it on me.
Yeah, exactly. So really, she uses services because it's a win-win. You got somebody you can blame, or somebody can say, "Man, hey, thanks a lot. You helped me a lot." Mm-hmm. So you grew up where? You grew up in Guam?
Yeah. So I was born in the Philippines. Background: my dad grew up in Southern California. Mm-hmm. He moved back to the Philippines to run our family's fisheries, so he's a fisherman by trade.
Okay.
But I grew up in Guam because he wanted to bring us back to Southern California.
Okay.
And so what happened was Guam was just a stopover where his brother was living at the time. So he was just going to move there. He moved from the Philippines to Guam with $200 in his pocket.
Oh, wow.
And I know something you and I talked about was a shared adversity.
Yeah.
You know, like things don't always go exactly as you plan. Imagine I put myself in his shoes all the time. Is like a newlywed for a couple of years. You have a 3-year-old kid. You want to make a better life from being a fisherman in the Philippines.
Right.
So he has some contacts in Guam, some contacts in Southern California. His idea is to move out there. What are you going to do?
Right.
With $200.
Right.
So what he did, and I'm not sure if he wants me sharing this. he never actually had to use it.
Right.
But he actually forged this cool little college degree from a technical college. It was, you kind of do what you have to do to survive, right?
And he's proud that he never
had to use it or share it, but he was prepared to.
Right,
he made it from this local college. He got some guy to like doctorate, essentially. It might as well be a displaced piece
at this point.
I mean, he got a, I guess, a bachelor's degree in fisheries.
Because he knew
that he could probably BS his way through. But, you know, like, gave us a really great life in Guam, got into the radio game, then the advertising game, then became a big executive for a car dealership out there that was actually a corporate-run thing for distributorships for the region. Right. So he got it out of the dirt. We were on food stamps at one point. But that's where I grew up. So I remember growing up poor in Guam.
Right.
And to the point where my dad actually got to send us to a private school because the education system was just a little bit better there. Mm-hmm. So I got to see all that kind of growing up on the island of Guam.
That's fantastic. So what was it like when you left Guam? First, while you're there, you were an athlete in Guam.
Yes.
So tell me what went on there in your athletic career.
So my biggest interests always have been athletics. Mm-hmm. I think you and I both kind of share that. My dad was in karate as well. He was training to do the Olympics while he was in Southern California. But athletics was one of the big, big things we were almost required to as kids.
Oh, good. Okay.
I became part of the youth national soccer programs. I would make it to the final teams, but I would never make the travel teams, which is really where I wanted to go.
Right.
So I kind of switched over to basketball, ended up diving in really deep. To that, as a Filipino man, basketball is just like, that's the national sport. Everyone, they could worship Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, all that stuff.
Right.
So I became that kind of stereotype. But, you know, as a Filipino guy, how many Filipinos can you see dunk a basketball?
Right.
I took that as a personal challenge.
Okay.
Trained really, really hard. I stand at 5'9". In high school, I was, 5'8", mm-hmm. 5'6", or something like that. Didn't grow to 5'9" until my senior year, but ended up making the rotations and eventually representing Guam in the junior national teams. We went to Australia, played New Zealand, Australia. We've actually made it pretty far into the round. We would have beat New Zealand if we not for a buzzer beater.
Oh, wow.
But really, as far as my athletic career goes, that was sort of the peak, being able to play. I almost got my first dunk in the game against New Zealand, against a guy named Jack Salt. He played D1 at Virginia. He's pro now in New Zealand. It was one of those things where I went up for a layup. I didn't realize I was going to go up as high as I was to dunk the basketball.
Yeah.
And I make the layup, but you hear the gravity kind of be sucked out of the room because everyone's anticipating something. And my buddy, when I get to the bench, he's like, "Why didn't you dunk that?" I'm like, "I didn't realize I was up that high."
Oh, wow.
It's crazy what adrenaline can do. So that's those are my little athletic feats before Guam.
That's fun. I remember conversations. Like, I've invested in a cold plunge.
Yep.
And I didn't want to go all in, so I've got the inflatable.
Yep.
I'm a big guy, so I'm an inflatable cold plunge. Just water just shoots outside. like a baby pool or something.
Oh,
but I just want to, you know, I didn't want to invest like $5,000 in one, otherwise I was going to do it. And that, now I like it. I've got a circulator. I'm probably going to get a larger one.
Mm-hmm.
But you told me that you guys would do what, hot cold?
Exactly.
It seemed like grueling because it's a. I'm glad when I'm out of it, but I'm not like, man, this is awesome. Let's
So to play at that national level, we were doing 2-3 day practices. Mm-hmm. One of the things in recovery, actually, one of the reasons why.
So or three practices a day?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So your body, to a certain point, can't necessarily handle that. And so I became interested with how we recovered. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they would do is we'd have a really, really cold pool, like a not freezing, but very cold pool, and we'd do a 3-minute plunge there, and then we'd go straight into a dry sauna, and then do back and forth. And let me tell you, that's some of the best feeling my muscles have been after any sort of workout. It was a very, very interesting approach. Learned that in Australia. They actually piqued my curiosity to the PT, athletics, and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Got me toward in that direction. Mm-hmm. The cold plunge that you have, I mean, I'm a big proponent for it, mainly because of its mental properties. If you're able to grit through that and get to where you start to feel good after the hard part, the first 5 minutes, you know, they're the hardest things.
Yeah.
But if you're able to push through that adversity, to get to the result of feeling less sore, right. more mentally clear,
right.
and actually moving into a point where the hard thing that you went through becomes the good thing that you went through. I think right. that's the biggest benefit overall.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know why they call it plunge. My first time, I was trying to slowly lower myself into it. You just got to just go for it.
Yeah.
It's a plunge. You're in. You're in. So as you know, we're having a contest to really encourage entrepreneurism in South Carolina called the $30,000 startup. And you applied to that,
yep.
and you're a finalist in the $30,000
startup. Very thankful
for congratulations.
That.
So you applied, but for what? Would you invent something to tell everybody what you're up to?
So first off, thanks for putting that together. Entrepreneurship is a pretty big piece of my heart. I'm on my way. You've had more successful, more experienced people on this podcast, and I'm on my way up there because I really want to be in that way. And the best way to do that is in entrepreneurship. So you doing things like that 30K power up challenge is huge. I've had this idea for going on 8 years now. I was actually trying to develop it while I was a doctoral candidate at MUSC. Mm-hmm. But I was frustrated with the fact that we don't really have a great way to measure progress in the performance realm really well at all. They either get like the top of line equipment or like you get a stopwatch, you know?
Right.
There was nothing that gave you that same feel of training really, really intentionally and training really, really smartly and knowing if you're getting better, but at the level in which you're not breaking the bank, but you're also not getting like your makeshift equipment. So Method Performance Labs is the company that we started with my partner, Ben Saraceno. The goal is to bring the NFL combine, NBA combine, that kind of stuff to your home court, your backyard.
Okay.
So, for example, one of the things that I talked about earlier is being able to jump, right? So one of the things that I would do to know if I was jumping any higher is I would put a sticky note on my hand,
okay,
right? And then I would try and just like stick it on the backboard,
right?
Which works great when the sticky note sticks,
right?
But it doesn't always sticks,
dusty, whatever.
Yes,
up there.
Exactly.
Right.
Then
right.
it doesn't stick and it doesn't work out. So I was like, all right, my high school, like I proposed that we get one of the Vertex, right? These like big tall Vertex. They're the things that you see in the NFL, people jump and hit.
Right.
They came back quickly saying it's $1,000 just to get it, and then to ship out to Guam's another $1,000 because it's so heavy. So it was like, oh, well, that's not going to happen.
Right,
so
right.
I've held on to that thought, but as a PT, it was like, okay, like what if I use my skills figuring out what's convenient and figuring out how to bring this kind of equipment into the hands of high school me and actually PT me as well, because I want to see if my athletes can jump high if they're recovering from rehab and all. So in short, Method Performance Labs creates these different equipment pieces to be able to measure things like vert, things like power, things like speed, but you can use them to train yourself to know, okay, I'm jumping higher. I'm getting stronger. I'm not having to guess whether I'm getting faster. When waiting for someone to time me, I'm going to have a self-timer for me to run back and forth and be able to time myself without anyone's help. So that way I could train on my own. If I'm working really hard, I can test my vertical. Right, in 3 weeks to see if my training is working, I could test it again, and you know maybe actually know how high I'm jumping. And
right.
the tools that the thing I invented was this Vertec that you can essentially attach onto a backboard, attach onto a soccer post that you can again be able to train on your own. Really, really easy to use. I'm really proud of it. We've begun the patent process for that, and we're really excited to hopefully expand that and manufacture it and bring it out to the world.
Man, that's exciting. That's exciting. Wow. So, you know, I said earlier on the show, I've been a martial artist for 50 years, and I stretch every day, and ended up surprising myself because I do different kinds of stretch. Some of you showed me, but I haven't done like a split in a long time. But I mean, I do things that would represent that or stretch the same muscles, but I hadn't done one because of the pressure I don't want to put on my knees.
Sure.
And the other day I was in Montana, and I'm tight, so I just wonder if I could do a split. Boom! I still did a split.
You're
so I was
kidding.
Like, so it was fantastic. So stretching is important, and the one you showed me with the hips is great. How important is flexibility as you age?
So you're ability to move and your flexibility and your strength all play in the factor of how much you're going to get out of life, right? We all know those people. We have those pictures of people in our heads of people that have lived a long life, but it kind of goes like this from top slowly down to the ground, you want to be maintaining a high level of activity and a high level of function. So as far as the importance of flexibility and your ability to move, you know, like if you're able to get in the splits, that's great. So that means if you lose your footing and you need to take an awkward step, you're not probably not going to strain your groin because you're able to move into that way. That ability is going to allow you to do so much more with your life if you maintain it. But it's up to you. It's not
It's every day. It's perishable for sure. So I had Tom Shannon earlier, and he talked about moving your body. He was a former Navy SEAL and taught buds, and he said if you do push-ups every day, sit-ups every day, and squats, that kind of moves all the major groups and keeps your body going. So would you recommend a similar thing, or do you have a different regimen that people should try?
I definitely want to make sure you're going to actually do whatever we say, right? I mean, you're a busy guy, right? What are the exercises that you will do are far more important than the exercises that are ideal to do. Ideally, you're doing I think the recommendations are 30 minutes of resistance training, 30 minutes of aerobic training 3 or 4 times a week, right? That's ideal, but who is going to be able to do that and maintain that for a long time, especially for busy people like who are listening, right? Everyone's listening here is listening to your advice for entrepreneurs. Everyone's got limited time, right? So when talking about your approaches of how to move a little bit better and how to be a little bit better suited for life, you want to choose the things that you'll actually do. So if you're really big into push-ups and you want a wide chest and want to be able to do these bodyweight motions, fantastic. But really choosing the things that will be most pertinent to your life. For example, we do a lot of rotational things, me and you, because you like to golf, right? You want to be able to rotate. If you can't rotate, your backswing's all messed up. And then you can't rotate all the way through. You're not going to generate any power. So you're not going to be having much fun golfing, right? So I would choose those things that seem the most closely resembling the things that you want to do in life. Squats are a great example. I love squats, mainly because I want to be able to stand up and sit down without using my hands or get up off the toilet. I don't want to ask for help getting off the toilet for the rest of my life. Those are all things that squats look like. So you want to choose those exercises and be able to be strong and be flexible into those movements so that way you can get the most out of life.
Gotcha. Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So in our show, the City Way to Success, we always talk about there's no success without a setback. Is there a setback that you're comfortable sharing that you experienced, and then how did you learn from it? And how did you grow from that setback?
Well, Eric, you and I have both talked about our family's backgrounds, like, you know, where we come from, what our families had to do to get us to this point. Like, we're nothing without the work that was done before even could remember, So, like, really thinking about that, a lot of that is the weight of trying to not let everyone down. And so, in our conversations, we kind of talk about how we just push and succeed and at all means necessary because we have this drive in our heart to actually push all the way through. One of the biggest setbacks, obviously, was when I was in PT school, my mom was on kind of like on her really big downtrend. And so I remember, man, I was in differential diagnosis class or pathophysiology. One of the ones I wasn't like super passionate about because it was like bowels. Like he wants to learn about bowels. But my mom was in the hospital all the way in Guam. And so, her health was up and down and I just didn't want to be there. And so what I did was when I showed up to the test, it was after a really hard call, I just went in and hit boom, 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 boom. I finished the test in 10 minutes. Fastest test I've ever taken. Yeah, I was thinking, you know, like, all right, it is what it is. I get a 55. But I get better than 50, which
is pretty good guessing.
Pretty excited.
But it's true or false. Yeah. So I don't know if you have 4. That's even remarkable. Yeah,
I mean, I did better than I thought I would. I figured, okay, there are a couple more tests. I can make it up if I need to. I'm just not mentally here.
Right.
So it happens again, the second test. boom, boom, boom. But I get 58, so I do a little bit better.
You're improving, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then in one of the conversations with my mom, I'm just telling
try
her.
Try Christmas tree, I've heard that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. C has the highest likelihood, right? So, yeah, you choose that. And again, it wasn't because... The setback was self-inflicted because mentally I just wasn't there. All the other classes that I was interested in, I was there, but like this one I just particularly didn't want because I was focused on, it made me think about my mom. So we get to the third test and I talk to my mom and she goes, son, one of the biggest things that I want to share with you and I want you to remember is just to do your best. If you're not doing your best, you're selling yourself short. I will always be proud of you if you do your best. Just do. She didn't care if I passed necessarily because I was telling her like, "Hey, I might fail," and she's like, not panicking. She's like, "Just do your best, and I will be proud of you." And so, all right. So, lady who is not able to get up on her own to go use the restroom, is telling me to do that. I'm gonna do that. So I go and do my best on this third test. Right. I get an 82. That's okay. That's pretty good.
Right.
But when you shoot yourself in the foot with a 55 and a 58,
first, it's hard.
You put yourself in a position where you have to get a 90, an A
on
this last one.
Yeah, just to make it, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And so this is kind of funny. As far as setback, I had a crush on my now wife, but we were only friends. And I was trying to get like a clear mind, man. And
I'll date you if you get a 90, right?
Yeah, well, and that was the whole thing. I was like, man, I need to figure out like if I don't pass, then I want to make sure I tell her how I feel. So I tell her how I feel one night, like 1 a.m. in Charleston, and then she lets me down so easy. So she's like, oh, man, I'm just not in that spot, man. So, like, I get basically rejected.
Right.
I have to – I'm in a hole in this way. I'm not sure if I'm going to continue PT school, all that. But, again, just remembering my mom's words of just doing your best, and that is success. I remember taking that test. Doing my best, I show up, and I think I do really, really well, but maybe not enough to pass this whole thing. But I show up at my professor's office a couple hours later, and he says, well, congratulations, Kaipo. You got exactly what you needed. You got a 90, exactly a 90, which, again, is, like, unheard of because I got a 55 and a 58 because I didn't really care all that much. Right. But it's a super small example, but I would have had to – derail my life. I had to take a year off of PT school, not get back in, and all that. But it was one of those situations to where if you remember the words from the people that actually care about you in hard and difficult moments in studying and life, that those are the things that kind of take you through and make you believe in yourself maybe more than you believe in yourself at the time.
Well, that's good. So, that's good.
What about you? You've asked that to like all your
15.
Give me one.
So many setbacks. Yeah. I mean, I've got one that I share all the time that I could share, but I've had so many. So, you know, I guess the thing that I had to deal with is, you know, called Study Your Way to Success was I was in a car wreck at age 5 and had a traumatic brain injury and then literally couldn't speak. So at dinner, I'm like, can you please pass the potatoes? And it was just tough. Jeez. And then my parents took me to a speech therapist. And this is 1972, and they're not very politically correct at this time. Yeah. No. So in my mind's eye, my legs are dangling off the chair, you know. But I remember them saying, like, you know, you stutter, life's going to be hard. You're probably going to be reclusive. You'll likely be a failure unless you really persevere because every conversation is going to be difficult. Every new relationship is going to be hard. Every day is going to be hard. But if you see these obstacles as things you overcome, they can become stepping stones. And you can overcome just about anything. You'd be very successful. And my parents, to their credit, didn't leave and go, what a quack. Let's get another opinion. They're like, she's right. Life's going to be hard. Yeah. Let's start today. And they set up a lemonade stand for me. And that day is 50 cents. And people would pull up and I would point to how much is it. And I'd point to it.
To get away from talking.
I didn't want to talk. They're always like, well, how much is it? And I'm like, it's 50 cents. And that was like magic for like, give me a dollar, I think. So I got tipped out and I made $82 that day. In 1972 dollars, which is almost $600 in today's money.
Ooh.
And my dad came home and goes, what'd you do? And I told him, he goes, I'm not sure I made $82 today. So that was the encouragement and kind of the same thing of your parents giving you that support. A lot of people don't have that, you know, but there's other family members or but that was helpful for me. Other setbacks were when I got in the brokerage business. I went to a training at a major firm, and they had a place in Princeton you train at. And I was, you know, this is personable. You really know the material, but you should get speech therapy. And it was just so mortifying.
Yeah.
You know? I'm like, oh, I've been doing it my whole life.
Yeah,
you
seriously.
Know? And then I started, and there was a pool against me that I would fail. There was a betting.
Really?
Yeah, brokers loved to bet back then. So it was like there was a pool of like how long until I got fired. And I had a manager who was like a true barbarian, where he would fire the bottom 20%.
It's cutthroat.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, like the
20
once a month, right? And you're like ah, and sheesh. I was like floating, you know, like you getting the 90, and yeah. just above. You know, and I would make 200, 300, 400 calls. You call somebody, here's Eric, can I invest? And they'd hang up on me, or they would like, stuttering stockbroker? Ned, is this you, right? So then that became a big setback for me, and I knew I was going to get fired. And I was getting laryngitis because, you know, just talking all the time. So I went door-to-door on Piedmont Road businesses and went to everywhere. And when you knock on the door, they open the door, and you're like, hi, I'm Eric. Come on in. You want some iced tea? Calm down. Let's talk. It's going to be okay. And then the next thing you know, I opened 500 accounts in 2 years. And I was those are the top five in the nation this firm of 10,000 people, sheesh, of reps for opening accounts. So it ended up becoming a blessing. So mm-hmm. I think what the reason I do this is encourage people to make lemonade other lemons, right?
Yeah, sure.
We all have setbacks. We all have pains. We all have things we have to deal with. And how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the biggest things.
I
always say that success whispers and failure, you know, scream seems like a bad word to use, but it really gets your attention.
Oh, yeah.
Setbacks too. So now when I talk to you, there are new things, and this is really impressive for me, so I'm going to brag on you a minute, but you were talking about a TED Talk, right?
Yeah.
And you're bringing them to Greenville. So how did that happen? That's a big deal, right?
Sure. Yeah, so TED, as a big organization, they allow these smaller, independently run, really volunteer-run, smaller conferences called TEDx. So if you see TED versus TEDx, TEDx are independently run. You'll see them online just the same. They look exactly like a TED Talk. TED's just like the global brand. So I've had this big dream of bringing great ideas around, right? Mm-hmm. So in undergrad, I wanted to do a TEDx there. They said no, because they're like, who is this kid?
Right.
Yeah, all right, cool, that's fine. In grad school, I said, hey, want to do TEDx MUSC? Same thing. They said no, like, who is this kid? All right. So I figured, okay, I might have a little bit more credibility now that I've been working a few years, and I really think that this could be awesome. And we see, especially here in Greenville, mm-hmm. There were a couple TEDx little conferences. The last TEDx Greenville conference was in 2020. Now it is 2023, 3 years later, and we still haven't had that back. And I think it may have been due to COVID, and they just haven't really restarted it. I do know that there could be plans for TEDx Greenville to come back, but my friend Evan and I, my partner Evan and I, we saw that as an opportunity to be like, all right, let's put our names in again. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and do it. It's fully unknown. Mm-hmm. It's something that we're both very passionate about as young entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. We're next up to bat. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out what we want to do to put our stake in the idea share that is happening in Greenville and the growth, right? So we apply, and we don't hear back for a couple months, and then we get this email from our account and basically asking us a couple other questions, figuring out, okay, like, we can't do the original name. The original name we wanted was TEDx Upstate, but they said that's way too broad. You can't take you can't take the entire upstate. Like, all right, that's fair. So we gave them five names that defined Greenville a little bit, between what Swamp Rabbit Trail and Reedy River, Falls Park, Camperdown even, and Unity Park. And they actually chose Unity Park. And this was soon after a declaration from the mayor that really highlighted Unity Park on a national stage. So we're actually hoping in the next 6 months, likely in March, We're going to be hosting TEDx Unity Park. We got the license for that, and we are super excited to bring the idea of movement. My partner, he's in film. He's an award-winning producer in the documentary space. But he's in motion picture, and I'm a physical therapist. Movement, like we talked about earlier, is really, really important. That's what we want to bring and talk about movement in the space of thought, the movement in the space of social change, and movement in the space of just movement in the body. And being able to make that the TEDx theme and bring those ideas to Greenville, talking to entrepreneurs that are established, people on the come up, and people with just a passion for movement in different capacities.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, great, great.
Yeah.
Well, when I talk to people, I always want to ask you, do you have a routine? Do you have something that you do in the evening or morning to get the clarity, the goal plan, to make each day efficient? Do you have a process you go through?
Oh man, I might have to ask you that same thing right after because I want to run. I want to hear what you do, man. Every morning, I have decided for the last 7 years or so, I want to make my morning piece my morning routine set the tone for what I want to in a day.
Right.
So that means something physical, something mental, something spiritual, and then setting my aspirations in front of me and my relationships in front of me and figuring out, okay, these are the things I want to do. Every morning when I wake up, if I don't have exercise as my first thing, I do what I call 50-50 read PM. Yeah. So that's 50 push-ups, 50 sit-ups. Shout out to your Navy SEAL guy. 50 push-ups, 50 sit-ups. Then I read. I usually read The Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday.
Okay.
And then my Bible. Mm-hmm. And then I pray and meditate on what I want to see out of the day. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this big, elaborate thing. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. It's really small. It takes me 10 minutes to do all these things. Mm-hmm. But in that 10-minute time frame, I've done something physical. I've exercised my body. I've exercised my mind. I've exercised my spirit. Mm-hmm. Now I feel more set for the day. And what I do, I use these notebooks right here. This brand I love. And I think I've given you one. If I haven't, I'm going to give you one. Field Notes.
Okay.
These are little pocket notebooks that you can use to track throughout the day and give you an idea of what you do, what you need to do to make today a success. And before, I used to write in these big notebooks, but I get so frustrated because, these are big thoughts and, I can never fill them up. If you can't fit everything you need to do to make your day a success in a little notebook like this on one page, then you're trying to do too much.
Right.
Keep everything simple.
Right.
You do one or two things to make the day a success. You compound that over the course of a lifetime, minutes
Huge.
To hours to
Huge.
Days, weeks,
yeah.
Then you're able to see that change over a course of life. And then at the end of the day, I try to give something to someone every day. Mm-hmm. So I've got a notebook I've been running for the last 5-6 years that is that I try to track what I eat because I want to remember, when you eat, most of your, sense is actually through your nose. Taste is 80% smell, and that's closest to where you remember your, hippocampus. Mm-hmm. So, I just want to be able to remember my days.
Okay.
So I track what I eat. And then I write down a lesson for the day. So anytime in the last 7 years you can give me a date, I can go back into my backlog. I can tell you exactly what I was thinking about in the morning. Mm-hmm. I can tell you exactly what I wanted to do, mm-hmm. If I gave something to someone and what it was, mm-hmm. as well as a lesson I learned and then what I ate, and I can likely backtrack how my day went from those things.
Wow.
Those are my habits, mm-hmm. and that's helped me stay grounded and helped me, on this journey from not very much to hopefully something more. It's helped ground me, but also guide me moving in that direction to show how much progress I'm actually maybe making.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's good. That's good.
What about you? Give me your daily.
I'm gonna walk to my briefcase.
Okay? Yeah, sure. Sounds good. So
I do a planning session.
Okay.
And this is one that I did as a capture section. So what I do is each day I try to, before I go to bed, I want to have a clean mind.
Mm-hmm.
So my morning starts before I go to bed. So I do a capture section. And this is like the who's eating your pie.
Yeah.
So I have a capture section. I have a do now section. I have an important, urgent, important, not urgent, urgent, not important, not urgent. And this one was in process because I'm not at the evening yet.
Yeah, sure.
But that's what I do.
Okay.
And then I only work in urgent.
Okay.
And then when that's done, then I move down to important, not urgent.
Sure.
I never get really get the urgent, not important. I mean, this bottom just makes me feel better than I write it down because I almost never get to. It's like dry cleaning, not important, not wash the car.
Yeah, I got that.
But that becomes important when you're trying to go see somebody or show somebody something, right? So
it's priorities.
But important, urgent is it. And then when I find out, and then in the morning when I wake up, then I can, you know, look at that. And if I have a lot of problem going on, then I'll write in the morning, my biggest problem as a question, and I write up to 20 ways to solve it and pick the one that's my focal point. But I, before I do that, I get up early, read a proverb, pray, then I exercise, stretch, and then this is a new one, the cold plunge.
Yeah. It's a habit.
Yeah. It's early and it helps. And then I think strategy. I have no communication with anybody until usually 8:30, and it's just so I usually have 2.5 hours of time to be focused or quiet. Now, if you're coming by at 7:30, you'll recognize.
Oh no, yeah, for sure.
I'm working, doing things still, but I try to be focused and I just kind of be strategic because once the day starts, it's on.
So how do you keep everything straight in your day then? Like you said, like you have your process of knowing what's important, what's urgent, what are your biggest problems.
Right.
But I mean, you're doing all these different things for a young guy like me, asking you, like, how would you tell me to build a habit of organization and prioritization? What are some strategies that you use that you can pass off to me?
Yeah. So I would just say you need to focus on the most important things. There are 5 areas of life: faith, family, fitness, finance, friends.
Right.
And you're never going to be balanced.
Sure.
Because there'll be demands of family, demands of every area will have a demand. But you need to seek to live in harmony. Mm-hmm. Once a quarter, I try to think about how's each area doing? It's never like 5 stars. Like I have people raise a question, 0 to 10, how are you in this area? And I make it a wheel, an 8, 6, 5, whatever it happens to be. And I had a guy raise his hand one time. I got a perfectly round wheel. I'm like, great. They're all 2s. You know? I'm like, that's not good,
that's
right?
That's not
right?
A good thing.
Let's push it out a little bit. But the areas you ignore in the end consume you. Mm-hmm. And you've talked about health or mobility. So if I ignore my health and mobility in pursuit of wealth, in the end, I will consume my wealth to restore my health and mobility. Mm. So life's a balance. Harmony is really probably a good way to put it. Mm. So I just try to look at, then this is what Tom Shea even mentioned, but it's offense, like sales or development. There's defense that you need to do. So, and then there's strategic. So how do I plan? So I start the day with strategy. Mm-hmm. And it's like you'll hear talk to any like general pattern, but everyone has a strategy till the first shot's fired, right?
Sure.
Then it changes, but you have strategic direction, and then you begin to adapt and make change throughout the day. And I try to have very clear, as much as possible, vision, where you want to go. So I look at vision, mission, legacy, impact. So vision's where you want to go. Mission are the steps you take to get there. Mm-hmm. Legacy is what you want to leave behind. Impact is really how you want to change.
Well, let me write that down. I said vision, mission, legacy, and impact.
Vision, mission, legacy, impact. Vision is where you want to go. Mission is how you get there. Legacy is how you want to be remembered. And impact is like the difference you want to make in the world today. So those are the things you think about. And then decision making gets easier if you're like, my vision is this. Here's where I want to go. Well, if this decision is not on point with that, doesn't mean you may not do it or go to a movie. Well, it's not really on point with that.
Sure.
But maybe it's family or maybe it's friends or or maybe it's just, it's okay, right? But it makes decision-making easier.
Okay.
And that's, so if you, to clarity in a few areas of your life will really hone things in, and then taking time to give thanks, be grateful. And I find the things that hold people back is lack of gratitude and bitterness. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that really hold people back in life because they consume your mental energy, leave you depleted. And if you can deal with those by forgiving others, forgiving self, whatever it happens to be, you'll have a lot more energy in life to live.
Oh, yeah. That's very clear. Thank you for answering that. That's pretty big for my own life.
Okay, good. But those are the big things. And really everything I learn from everybody. My favorite thing about doing these is I make notes like crazy. Yeah. How can I implement things learned in my practice. So what's next for you?
So what's next for me? Well, entrepreneurship is big. I'm if I'm going to practice PT, I'll be with the practice I'm with, Limitless Therapy and Wellness. Jordan is actually the person that started treating you, and then he handed it off to me. He's really, really been awesome. But as far as what's next for me, I've got a few things, but I'll narrow it down to three main ones. The thing that's most interesting, most likely, is the I'm as a former Guam national and staying connected with that group. I'm actually been fortunate enough to be selected as one of the Guam national PTs.
Oh wow!
So I will be going to the Solomon Islands for 3 weeks in November for the Olympic qualifiers in the Pacific region. So it's the Pacific Games,
right?
So that's going to be really exciting. It's happening in Honiara, which is I believe the island chain of the Solomon Islands is near or within Guadalcanal, so everyone kind of knows that for reference.
Yeah, sure.
So I'll be going there, hopefully keeping on building up that sort of work. I want to give back to my – you've talked about a lot about giving back, giving back to the Guam community, kind of raised me. So that's a really big piece. I've got – a couple speaking opportunities and teaching at a couple colleges. I've got some guest lectures at AU and BJU and working on a couple others. Big on the whole idea of giving back in education. I think education is one of the strongest things for everything. And then obviously this MPL idea, Method Performance Labs, hoping that we're able to formulate a solid pitch and hopefully get really good feedback from the judges in the 30K competition. Those are the really, really big things.
That's fantastic. Yeah. That's great. That's great. Well, congratulations. It's wonderful having you on my show today. And thanks for joining me for another episode of Stuttering Your Way to Success with Kaipo Sotelo. Thank you, Kaipo.